want to thank Bill Stoner for The Breakfast Bar. Thank you so much for tuning in. Stay tuned for News and Public Affairs with Commentary coming right up. And you're listening to WSLR 96.5, low power FM in Sarasota, Florida. And if you're in Bradenton, you're listening to WBPV 100.1 in Bradenton, Florida. Surreal News is your news and public affairs with commentary show, which is coming right up, your weapon of mass instruction. We've got a great show coming up. Don't touch that dial. All right, well, we're going to bring that music down here because we have a very busy show this morning. My name is Steve Norris, and I have in the studio Glenn Ghibellina, who's our catalyst, and also in the studio today, Francis Schurer, our ambassador. Good morning to you, Francis.
Hi to you. And what a wonderful morning to be here, too. And, you know, Glenn's got this great T-shirt on, and it's a red T-shirt with white letters, and it says, "Real Women Support Fathers' Rights." Now, isn't that a good way to start off a Friday?
All right, so we have somebody else in the studio as well.
That's right.
Yeah. So who else is with us?
Well, we have the well-known Jan Schneider, and Jan's here to tell us a little bit about what she's going to be running for and how she's going to be making that bid. And she's been a girl on the front lines for a long time, tough, able, competent, knowledgeable, and right on the beam.
Good morning. Are you suggesting also old?
I didn't. No, I didn't. You're not as old as I am, anyway.
All right, so we have a lot of questions for Jan about why she's running and what the important issues are. We're going to get to her about half past the hour. But before then, we were asked to also have on another guest. Normally, we don't have as many guests on. Our other guest?
Who's our other guest?
Okay, so I'll say here. So we have the Florida Sun Initiative.
Those
and that's Angela Demon-Brun and Mary DuBois. They're going to join us at about 15 minutes past the hour to talk about the solar initiative, which is near and dear to WSL.
Well, yeah, that's right. We're part of our group is covered with solar, you know. I mean, we're making a statement with our own footprint.
Indeed. So we'll certainly talk about that during that segment, which is coming up about in about 15 minutes past the hour. Well, at about 3 minutes past the hour, we all start with Glenn, our catalyst here, and we start usually with local news. Sometimes we get to state news, but I understand today we have some news about some taxes, some regressive taxes that Glenn is going to talk to us about. Good morning, Glenn.
Well, good morning, and good morning, listeners. Yes, the items on this morning are going to be about the half-cent sales tax for the Manatee County School Board, and they've been collecting it for the last 15 years, and they want another 15 years out of it. And I believe they're going to have a tough time on this. The problem with this tax is that the school board has misappropriated and millions of dollars over the last 15 years, and they have very little accountability of where that money is going. So I think that particular half-cent sales tax will be a tough choice for the voters in Manatee County this time around. And for the school board, we have Watchdog Miner is running again. And, of course, John Colon.
He's been on the show.
Yep. And John Colon was just reappointed. He was going unopposed. So we'll see where that goes. And, you know, talking about the half-cent sales tax, we wouldn't need it if the school board had been collecting the correct impact fees from the large developers. That's the problem the voters are going to have to recognize and follow their conscience on this. If they would have been collecting the 100% impact fees for the last several years, we would have between $80 and $100 million for that new high school that we need out in Parrish. So the voters have to think about that. I am against the half sales tax. I think there's other revenue sources that the school board should and take with the big developers and the impact fees.
Yeah, let me just mention, just the news and views here are just the people that gave them this show. We're going to talk about some views, and we're going to add our own perspective. And my suggestion is Well, take what you like and leave the rest. This is a news and commentary show. We want to thank you for tuning in. Lou Larini, our usual co-host, is out this week, so we'll hopefully have him back next week. If you were talking about this tax, and just explain the difference between a progressive and a regressive tax.
Well, the progressive tax on the half-cent sales tax, they've been doing this for 15 years, and it's time for them to tighten up the belt. We've tried to be getting accountability from the school board over the last four or five superintendents, and they just cannot find the money. I'm not talking hundreds of thousand dollars. I'm talking millions of dollars. And the half-cent sales tax for the county is going to be on the ballot initiative as well. And we defeated that in the citizens defeated that in 2015 on the indigent care. It's not necessarily that the taxpayers were against it. Again, it was the accountability and transparency of the Manatee County government that the citizens have the problem with. They wanted to institute this half-cent sales tax and not tell us where it was going. So,
interesting.
So they're going to do the half-cent sales tax now again for infrastructure and roads and everything else. And again, the problem that I have is they have not exhausted all their revenue sources, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And they're going to have a tough time with that as well.
Let me just get back and comment just for 1 minute. Did you have a comment? I'm sorry.
No, I'm just listening to that.
So the difference between sort of regressive and progressive, and that is, for example, for the impact fee, if people move into town, the people who pay extra money are the people building the houses and the developers for the infrastructure that's needed for those new houses, schools and roads and firemen, etc. In other words, the bill goes to the people who are coming in who are with the new houses, as opposed to a tax which goes to everybody. And if you're poor, it tends to affect them more.
Regressive taxes are worst on those who can least afford them.
Yes, and if you look at the Alice...
In a nutshell.
And if you look at the Alice report from United Way, it will tell you that over 40% of the population of Manatee falls within the indigent, not the indigent, within the lower income levels. And that tax would affect them. They say that the tourists will pay 30 to 35% of that. I've not seen any documentation in that direction from either the commissioners or the school board or anybody. So if the tourists were going to pay a third of it, then find out what they're buying and just triple it, and the problem would be solved.
And the problem with not having an impact fee is that the person that mostly benefits are the developers like Carlo Baruff, right?
And Baruff, Medallion Homes, Neil Homes, all the big players. And here's the thing with the impact fees. They can only be used for infrastructure, for new schools, for roads, for sewers.
Okay.
So if you don't collect that money, why should a citizen like me that lives, 10 miles away in a community that's been there for 30 years put into that ante and help build those roads? That's not the part of the impact fees.
All right, that's our local news by our catalyst, award-winning catalyst, Glenn. And tune in every Friday at a few minutes past the hour for local and
our award-winning catalyst. News. I love that.
Yes. You know, he won the award for the catalyst, right, Glenn?
Oh, I heard that on the radio recently when he was awarded that.
Yes.
No, but I just love the term.
For the remote area medical, which is coming up.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was phenomenal. I hope that comes off again this year really well.
We are going to get to some Media Matters minutes, but before we do, I want to just do some surreal. We have a couple minutes for some surreal news, and then we have Florida Sun coming up in about 5 minutes. And out of England, we have the ex-prime minister, Tony Blair, saying that he made the right decision when he went to Iraq. We had the report, which just came out with some conclusions. So everybody hold your breath. I'm going to go through these conclusions and encourage some comments here. And this commentary show. So the report concluded, first of all, there was no imminent threat from Saddam Hussein.
You want a comment?
If you want.
Well, there wasn't any. He was like a pea on a big ocean, you know? I mean,
a trumped-up excuse.
Yes. I like this next one.
So poetic.
How about Trump topics? Yeah, very good. The strategy of containment, remember that with the inspections, et cetera, could have been adopted and continued for some time. So the inspections were actually working
That's right.
at the time, even though they said not. The judgments about the severity of the threat posed by the Iraqis' weapons of mass destruction were presented as a certainty that was not justified.
Everybody knows that now.
The mushroom cloud.
Yeah. The trailer is full of rockets.
Right, that cake stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, and all that turned out to be not true. Despite the warnings, the consequences of the invasion were underestimated. Well, we see that now. The planning and preparations after Saddam were wholly inadequate.
We go into things for regime change without any idea what the people want of a new regime.
And I think I can sum them up in one word. ISIS.
ISIS.
Exactly.
Right? The widespread perception that the September 2002 dossier distorted intelligence produced damaging legacy, undermining trust and confidence in politicians. So we had on our show Mel Goodman many times, a former
right.
CIA analyst.
Right.
And the idea here is that you can't politicize intelligence. Intelligence needs to be just information mm-hmm. that you can use. And that this event undermined our confidence in politicians and in the CIA intelligence.
Right, well, we had the vice president going over to the CIA, and it was like tampering with what they had as knowledge, and then giving them the story they're supposed to come out with. You had made so many visits to the CIA, they thought they was part of the staff.
Yep. And we had them fixing the intelligence, Tony Blair fixing the intelligence
right.
that came out too. He's
right.
denying that in this story here. And if you are running for Congress, you probably want to have good intelligence to make your decisions, because Congress has the ability to decide for war or not, at least the old Congress in the old United
That's
States.
Right.
So I guess if I was going to be a congressional candidate, I would be very interested in having intelligence that wasn't corrupted.
I opposed the Iraq War based on the intelligence we had public back in 2001, as did Bob Graham, who I will always admire for the strong stance he took on that and voting against the war.
Yeah. So did our current president at the time when he was a senator.
We are going to get more. I'm sorry?
So did our current president when he was a senator.
And we'll get more into Jan during her segment about 9:30 or so, about half past
okay.
the hour. We got another minute here. I'll just mention the government failed to achieve its stated objectives. And I think part of this is that there were some objectives which were not stated
right.
behind. And I think many of us are still scratching our heads as to sort of the why this happened in the first place.
Are you Correct. Still on the British government or the American government? Because the objective.
Okay.
Yeah. Well...
So where are you up to there? Making phone calls?
We're just about there. Okay.
Okay.
So that kind of brings us to the end of our news segment. We're not going to have too much time to do
okay.
much else. But we do have time before our guest for this Media Matters Minute. Don't touch that dial.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Sharon Kahn. 2 weeks after being fired, former Fox News host Gretchen Carlson fired a sexual harassment retaliation lawsuit against Fox News CEO Roger Ailes. Fox News has a long history of promoting sexism. Ailes' misogyny has been well documented in Gabriel Sherman's 2014 biography, and Media Matters has highlighted the sexist remarks made on a number of Fox News programs. Just listen to a few examples here.
Are female breadwinners a recipe for disharmony within the home?
At Babes, Chicks, what do you call them, Steve? Skirts?
Greg, I'll give you what, like a 5-second answer.
I like your top.
Listen, I mean, let men be men.
In September 2013, we caught Carlson herself hinting at Fox's sexist culture on Fox News Radio's Kilmeade and Friends.
Guess who just walked in? If you're watching, if you have the podcast, Gretchen Carlson's in, dressed casual,
they
kind
don't, wait
of.
A
Very
minute.
Nice.
Nobody's going to recognize me because not only am I dressed casually, I have on pants.
Well,
okay?
Pants.
Now,
what
pants, we're not allowed on Fox and Friends, remember?
For more on Fox News's sexism problem, please visit MediaMatters.org.
I want to thank Media Matters. They're a nonprofit out of Washington, D.C. that supplies us with that audio. And you're listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. We're also broadcast on WBPV 100.1 in Bradenton, Florida. I'm Steve Norris. And Francis is going to introduce our guests.
Hi. Are you both on the phone? Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Are you both there?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm going to hear one voice.
Well, let me encourage you, speak up as loudly as you can. Let me get your volume up here. Say hello.
Mary DuBois.
Okay,
great.
And where's Angela?
I'm right here. Angela is a mom friend.
Okay, and are you both using the same telephone?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. I want to get the dynamics out of the way. Well, first of all, welcome to WSLR. We're really looking forward to this discussion about solar, because solar is such a key issue in the mix of energy. We even have the roof on this radio station about three-quarters slab with solar panels, so we're in the game. So what I'd like you to do is kind of take a little bit and tell us each what you're about and what your main purpose is in what you're doing.
Well, we are about to launch solar co-op across the state of Florida. The program that's doing that, it's a nonprofit. It's called FL Sun, and we are have a state partner in the Florida League of Women Voters, and we envision launching 6 co-ops in the next 12 months.
What areas would you like those to be? Well, to take off in?
Well, we currently are in discussion with Orange County, St. Pete area,
the Space Coast, and we have received a grant from a nonprofit in your general area, the Gulf Coast Community Foundation, and in the near future, we would be launching a co-op in that area.
Okay. And why did you choose the areas that you did?
Why did we choose the areas that we did?
Yeah.
We, in the case of St. Pete, we have a very strong League of Women Voters chapter, and they have a great relationship with the local Sierra Club. And St. Pete is a community that has signed on to a Sierra Club program called Ready for 100, and that essentially commits the city to striving to use 100% renewable energy in the coming decades, and so they were very well positioned to be our very first solar co-op. In fact, that will launch in this month with a solar information meeting and exciting things to come there.
Right.
In the case of Orange County, we actually had 2 solar co-ops in 2015 in Orange County, and the Orange County government was very interested in seeing that we host another one, and so they've given us a grant to do that. So in some cases, we have grants from local groups. In other cases, we've been able to raise money and apply, funding to cover a location. In the case of St. Pete, that's the case.
Okay, and so in Orange County, it's a successful. You already had one successful implementation there, so is the second. This one is now a follow-on to that.
Yes.
Okay. And actually, before we go on, I just have a quick question about the League of Women Voters. This isn't traditionally, as far as I know, the kind of a program that the League of Women Voters normally is involved with, unless I'm missing the boat.
Well, as your listeners are well aware, we are strong advocates throughout our state, and we feel this is such a great opportunity to bring solar to our state, as well as work and advocate for some upcoming amendments. So we're twofold. We're going to help create and partner with Florida Sun to create solar co-ops throughout the state, as well as advocacy on upcoming amendments.
Okay.
This is very aligned with our goals.
Okay, that's very good. So in the other places that you've chosen to do the co-ops after Orange County?
Well, the Space Coast, we believe, will be coming on soon after that.
Okay.
And as I said, the Gulf Coast Community Foundation has given us some funding, and so we will be talking to them about what area they would like to see that co-op be, serviced. So we are in discussions with other communities, but those are kind of early discussions. But the goal is to do a variety of locations around the state, at least 6 this first 12 months.
Now, there are some traditional questions that I'm kind of keen to ask you, because people ask these all the time. For example, how do solar panels work?
Well, solar panels, we're talking about solar PV panels, and they require sunlight to produce electricity. The sun rays are, you know, coming down on the solar panels. There are silicone wafers inside the panels. I am not a physicist, so I'm not going to be able to describe exactly how that happens. But there is no water and no water piping involved. So these panels have no moving parts. They do produce electrons that are directed to an inverter on the side of the house or the side of the building,
right?
Which inverts the power coming off the panels from AC. I'm always AC and becomes DC, or it might be the other. I'm right now. I'm forgetting exactly.
That's right, right around. But you're right.
DC
okay.
To AC, which helps power our house.
Okay, right. So it actually comes. The sun hits the panel. The panel collects it. It goes down into this unit. It gets prepped for going directly into the house, and that runs the lights and systems, or it goes into a battery
right.
unit?
Right. It's not dedicated to any particular appliance, like a solar, you know, like a water heater
right.
or a pool. It is used as any other electricity that would be coming in the house. It does come in through the electric
okay.
meter on the side of the house.
All right. Now, if I were to get a solar system myself, how long could I expect a solar system to last?
Well, many of our solar panels have a warranty up to 25 years.
Okay.
So you're good to go for 25 years and maybe more.
All right.
The life of these panels really is greater than 25 years. And in many cases, older panels are working very well, you know, at 35 and 40 years. So long life on these panels.
Great. And do they need maintenance? And how is that done?
No maintenance required.
Okay, so no moving parts, right?
No moving parts.
Okay.
And here in Florida, we don't, I think the most we have to deal with is rain, but that's it. There's no moving parts. They're just on your roof. And of course, an installer that a homeowner would pick could maybe be their one contact, but no maintenance required. It's not like an appliance in our home where maybe we need a tune-up. It's not that case at all.
Okay. Now, if I have solar on my roof and I'm getting energy from my solar as well as the like FPL, sorry, what happens if the grid goes down? You know, like does the roof take over, or?
The grid, these systems are designed so that they go down along with the grid.
Hmm.
And that's done for safety reasons. The idea is we want to protect people working on the lines and not have any, you know, live lines. So most of the systems are definitely tied to the grid, and they are designed to go down with the grid for safety reasons.
Okay. My co-host, Glenn, who looks over the city of the whole area of Bradenton, has a question.
Good morning. Thank you for coming on. And I've been a passionate solar enthusiast for over 30 years, so I'm quite familiar of the systems. Most of the systems are grid-tied, but for those that want to exercise the option of battery bank backup, when the system goes down, your house would continue operating for a short time. So that option is always there. It's a little more expensive, but it is there. My second question is, on the co-ops, you're talking with municipalities. What about if large trailer parks or neighborhoods wanted to get a co-op going? Isn't there a kilowatt a size limited to co-ops? I mean, we're fighting FPL here.
We are not an electric utility. The word, the type of co-op we're talking about is really a buyer's co-op, and it's a group of folks that come together really for a single transaction. They select an installer, and that installer then works with each homeowner on an individual basis, but provides, you know, that one price that's been negotiated per panel or per system. And so we're not a electric utility in the sense of, you know, providing electric power to our members.
I actually want to take a look at the political issues, because you've got some political issues that you're having to deal with too, aren't we?
The amendments? Absolutely.
Yeah. Can you speak to that?
So, yes, we have two amendments coming up, and all Floridians can vote on. August 30th, our first one, Amendment 4, would give tax breaks to property owners who install solar panels as well as companies that lease panels to homeowners. It also will help out big utilities reduce their tax liability on panels. That's the first one in August. The second one in November, this is already existing law. However, this would add a section in the Florida Constitution giving residents of Florida the right to own or lease solar energy equipment for personal use. It's already in law and has been law since the 1970s. We would encourage voters to vote no on this particular amendment because we'd like to move forward. We don't want to see the status quo remained and enshrined in the Constitution.
Okay, so that's when you feel forward, do that.
So you advocate yes in August, no in November?
Yes. Yes in August, no in November.
Okay.
All right. This is Steve Norris. I just have a comment here because we've discussed this before, that there was another initiative which didn't get enough votes to get on the ballot in November, and instead the Florida Power and Light and the powers that be came up with their own initiative, which is somewhat confusing and is not progressive. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, you did.
We would agree with everything you just said.
Okay, so tell us about the initiative which was going to be in November, but you didn't get enough signatures to have it this November, but that's coming up, and why this the entities put up this other bill instead. Was that to confuse people?
Yes. So many environmental groups throughout the state of Florida tried to and unsuccessfully gather enough petitions to have on the ballot a more progressive ballot initiative to move us forward, to allow our residents to expand solar in their communities. And so the utility companies came as a competing amendment, really, to maintain what we have today and put it in our Constitution. And so that is what we will be voting for in November, not the more progressive one that was put forth through our environmental groups.
Okay. Well, two things I want to cover. First is what is the benefit of participating in a co-op?
The benefits.
Oh, well, the benefits, I'd say the biggest benefit would be the cost savings. Many times people that join a co-op can find savings of 10 to 20% by combining efforts with their community members, and this could be in geographical regions, countywide. It depends on the co-op. But I would say that would be the biggest benefit. And Florida Sun, and along with the League of Women Voters, we will help homeowners throughout the entire process, so they're not out there alone. We will hold their hands through the installer process, picking and choosing the entire process. So we're very excited, and I think that would be the best benefit as well as the cost savings.
Well, your traditional co-ops are kind of hands holding hands, helping others. So that's wonderful. If people want to find out more about your programs, do you have phone numbers and websites for that?
We would encourage everyone to visit www.flsun.org. And right on the homepage, they can put their information, and we will maintain contact with them, keep them informed of the ongoing initiatives in their community, because if it's not in their community right now, it's coming. We're trying to keep up with the demand. So that would be the first stop, is flsun.org. Please add your information, and we will keep in touch with you throughout the entire process.
Okay. And so we won't look for a phone number. We'll just follow up on that. The website. Let's just use the website. It's probably more comprehensive.
Yes.
Great.
Yes. Okay. I could also share the phone number.
Okay.
It's 904
351-8570.
Brilliant. I want to thank you both very much for coming on the show today, and we wish you great success with this project.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you, Stephen. Good morning. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Very good. That is the Florida Sun. They're associated with the Florida League, the Sarasota, Florida, and the Florida League of Women Voters. And we have Jan Schneider coming up just after this Media Matters Minute.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Dayanita Ramesh. Several conservative journalists are in an uproar over Donald Trump's insane praise of Saddam Hussein during a campaign speech.
Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, right? He was a bad guy, really bad guy. But you know what he did well? He killed terrorists. He did that so good. They didn't read him the rights. They didn't talk. They were a terrorist. It was over. Today, Iraq is Harvard for terrorism. You want to be a terrorist, you go to Iraq.
Commentary magazine's John Podoritz called Trump a lunatic while pointing out that Hussein's Iraq was actually a state sponsor of terrorism. In National Review senior editor Jay Nordlinger tweeted, quote, Trump wanted Bush 43 impeached, yet he is defensive of Saddam Hussein, your GOP nominee. Congrats, guys. This isn't Trump's first foreign policy blunder. Numerous foreign policy experts have slammed Trump's unintelligible foreign policy positions, calling his ignorance breathtaking. For the full guide to those criticisms, please visit MediaMatters.org.
Oh, we so love those Media Matters Minutes, boy. Putting that stuff out there. Nonprofit out of Washington, D.C. All right, so if you're in Bradenton, you're listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM. If you're in, if you're in Sarasota, if you're in Bradenton, you're 100.1 BPFM. This is News and Public Affairs with Commentary, your surreal news weapon of mass instruction. And I'm delighted to have in the studio Jan Schneider. Good morning to you, Jan.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
I have an abbreviated bio. We could spend the whole, I think the whole show reading your bio, but there's a couple of things I want to mention before we get started. You graduated Yale Law School,
with
PhD.
With the Clintons.
Yes, that's right. You were with the Clintons in the same class, correct?
That is correct.
That's so cool.
One of the reasons I'm doing this. Well, Hillary was a year ahead of us, actually.
That's so cool. Okay, that's Yale University. Prior to that, summa cum laude from Brown in 3 years. Oh, very impressive. Master's in International Relations. Certificate from the Russian Institute of Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs. That will certainly come in handy for your run for Congress, Jan Schneider for Congress. Certificate of International Organization from the University of Geneva in Switzerland. Involved with, you want to comment?
No, I was just about to say, but it's not about me. It's really about the voters this
time. All right,
time.
But right now it is about you.
I love the big bio, but
we'll get to
get to the issues?
Well, I just want to let people know that you have extensive, including very impressive credentials about international politics, international law, United Nations Association of National Capital Area, etc., ocean law, protecting the waters, Lemon Bay Conservatives, Seniors for Pets, Pets too, okay, just to name a few.
Love animals.
All right, so why? Why would somebody as brilliant as yourself with extensive experience here want to run for Congress?
Well, you did mention I'm a Yale-educated lawyer. I have a PhD in political science from Yale, and I can count to five. I am running for the 16th Congressional District. I am well aware that Vern Buchanan is a fifth-term congressman. But our political system is so broken. Your Media Matters quote from Donald Trump emphasized that better than I ever could. This is the leadership of one of our parties now. I think this is a crazy election year. Anybody can be defeated in this election year. But even if not, we have to defeat Donald Trump. He's a racist, sexist, misogynistic liar, in my opinion, so I don't get you sued. And I think that the contribution I can make to the voters of this district, and I hope also the country, is to help get issues out there. We're losing sight of issues. We have elections that can be and are being bought. By the way, if your League of Women Voters are still listening, I did want to say we all owe them a great, great debt of gratitude for what they did for fair elections and against gerrymandering in this state. We will have better elections because of the League of Women Voters and their partners, and that was wonderful on their part.
Yeah, so we could just spend a minute and just thank them. They were successful in going through the courts and getting the redistricting fixed. Agreed.
Of course, one of the results is this congressional district divides Sarasota in half, but which I think is unfortunate, but that was a consequence of getting fairer districts, and they did that for us.
So tell us about District 16 that you are trying to represent.
District 16 used to be Sarasota, almost all of Manatee. It now goes from Clark Road in Sarasota north to the Alafaya River in Hillsborough County. So we lost voters south of Clark Road and gained them in Hillsborough County.
And the demographics?
The demographics, oddly enough, nobody has published that I can find statistics on the new district. The old district had very marked statistics, which I don't think are very much changed. For example, the old district was, in terms of median age and number of Social Security recipients, the second oldest district in the country. That makes senior issues of paramount importance. Southern Hillsborough is a little younger, but we probably still enjoy that dubious distinction, or probably near to it. So Social Security, that's one area in which I disagree with Vern Buchanan forcefully. Medicare, veterans health care, we disagree somewhat. I think we have to protect Social Security. Vern Buchanan is neutral on privatization. And I asked the voters, had we had privatized Social Security in 2009, what would have happened to this area? That's a statistic of the area. We have the second highest number of Social Security recipients, and it's about $3.6 billion into this district a year, for starters.
All right, so you're mentioning you're going to some issues. I like that. Tell us how the middle class could be helped by you, your candidacy, versus the current policies with Vern Buchanan.
Well, can I start back in 2001 when I
Please.
Ran against Catherine Harris? The number one issue in my previous campaigns was the Iraq War. I'm still disturbed over what's going on in Iraq, obviously, and we're still having combat deaths in Iraq. People don't realize that. There were 7 military deaths last year, 2 were combat deaths. But the second issue back then was the vanishing middle class, and that has become a much worse issue. Income inequality is growing. Wealth inequality is growing. That's happening on the one hand. And on the other hand, we have corporations gaining enormously greater strength in our political processes. You had the Citizens United case, the McCutcheon case. Then we even had Hobby Lobby. Corporations can have religious convictions. When you let elections get bought like that, the results are going to be anti-middle-class policies, and they have been. I disagree with Vern Buchanan, as I said, on Social Security. Vouchers for Medicare. Medicare is crucial for older people. In 10 years, if you have vouchers, all of our seniors here are expected to be paying 40% more for their health care. There are some areas I agree with Vern Buchanan on, to be fair. Shall I say those?
I'm surprised, but go ahead.
No, we mostly agree on veterans issues and drug issues. There is one critical veterans issue on which I think we disagree, and that's privatizing the veterans' health care system. At least many of his fellow Republicans in Congress, and he has a great record of voting with the leadership, want to privatize the veterans' health care system. All of the major, or at least most of the major veterans groups, are so against that. And I think people who fought for us, they deserve a separate health care system that addresses separate issues, and they deserve how they want it to be. Now, the veterans' health care system fell apart, and the disability system fell apart, but the way to save it is, I do not think, to privatize it.
Healthcare. Let's kick that around a little bit. You mentioned vets and healthcare. How about the issue of healthcare generally, and contrast your views to those of Vern Buchanan?
Well, I'm a single-payer person. I would have held my nose and voted for Obamacare because it is unquestionably a step forward. We have at least 12, maybe 20 million more people with health insurance in this country. It's got more people healthier, and that should be a basic right. But the system is unwieldy. It's excessively expensive, and it's excessively complicated. My own preference would have been to expand Medicare down in 5 or 10 year increments on a voluntary basis till we had effectively a national single payer health care system. I know the statistics. Medicare is said to run on 3% administrative costs, whereas private insurance companies are up to 30. Problem is, Medicare has the Social Security Administration doing administrative work, and we have that anyway. But still, the Republicans have voted to dismantle Obamacare. I think it's over 60 times now. That would be a huge step back, even though I think we can do a lot better.
All right, I guess the obvious question is, how would you work with a House that's primarily Republican, assuming that, that they're in control? And what we see now is protests going on by the House Democrats. You would be a House Democrat. All right, so comment on your role against a primarily Republican field here.
Well, this is, I hope we don't have a primarily Republican field, number one. I hope we have a Democratic Senate and at least come within reach of a Democratic House. But people have to learn to talk to each other, to find some common ground. Now, by profession, I'm a litigator, and you'd think, oh, you fight by profession. But also, as a litigator, I know very well that what you think is your best solution going into a case looks tremendously different at the end. That's why so many settle. And if people could talk to each other in the same way they're forced to in that private context, maybe we could get things done better. For example, I think the Republicans in the House are coming around a bit on gun control, so that the Democratic sit-in, or whatever you call it, may have had a positive effect. The country was with the Democrats largely, and I think people are talking to each other better as a result of the sit-in. That's not a recommended way of getting your way. It's obstructive, but it is, I think, beginning to show that we can have some movement there. Of course we have Second Amendment rights. No one wishes to take them away. But there are more sensible solutions to reduce gun violence. And I think that there has been an influence on that.
All right, so let's kick this around a little bit, because the gun issue, obviously, it's in the news quite a lot. And, well, a lot of the Democrats have been saying what you've been saying straight along. A lot of people come into this room and say, yeah, we'll work with them and we'll litigate with them. And then you go there and the door is shut. You can't get rooms. You can't even hold meetings. So assuming the current situation hasn't changed much. And what's in the news today, by the way, is that Paul Ryan is now going after those House Democrats and trying to impose more rules to prevent anything from happening, from the sit-in, from occurring, and even considering litigation, even maybe arrests, et cetera, we're not sure, against those for having electronic devices on the House floor. So I hear what you're saying. very sounds great. You're going to work with them. Okay, very good. Obama said the same thing. But reality is you have the head, you have Paul Ryan saying, no way. Not only are we not going to work with you, we're not going to have any bills passed. And also we're going to go after the individual Democrats' litigation to try to go after them as criminals for what they did. All right? So what you're saying doesn't – I don't know if it doesn't
in a
seem
way,
like
that's
it's practical.
Great. It will make them more prominent. Those who staged the sit-in on an issue 90% of the citizens agree with. But let's go back a step. The critical thing is the voters. I said at the beginning, now I have a terrible voice, but it's not my voice. It's the voice of the people that matters. People have to speak out more. You guys are certainly promoting that in this community, and we thank you as well. 90% of the American people favor stricter gun controls, but they have to make this known. Make it known through who you elect, but also make it known from what you say every day. Another thing is, people have to learn what they're voting on. We seem to have a Congress, some of the people in the Congress, I wonder if they can read. Or I wonder if they do read, you know. So much of congressional time these days, seriously, is taken up in fundraising and politics that they're excessively dependent on staffs for knowing what they're doing. We need some congressional representatives who will do instead of talking. Now, that's hard to do if you want to get reelected. Fortunately, I'm older. That is not my main objective. My main objective is to bring focus on issues against Vern Buchanan, and as a fallback, on issues against Donald Trump. Say we couldn't win the congressional election here, which I think we can. The district is better. The voters have come around. I found a campaign card from 2001 the other day. I could pass it out today. But we can defeat Donald Trump in this district. Think of Sarasota. Obama in Sarasota County came within 300 votes of winning the county. We're seeing change. So if we can build that up by 1,000 votes, Florida is the battleground again. Like it was in 2000, I believe it's going to be the battleground, and that means effectively about four areas in Florida, of which we are one. So if we can do that, that I think is a great service to the country. Newspapers and all talk about viability, often equated to money. Money is not the only thing at stake in this election.
All right, you're listening to the voice of Jan Schneider. She's running for Congress in this upcoming election. Vern Buchanan is the incumbent. There are other Democrats who are also going to be running as well. And there's a primary coming up, yes?
Yes, there's right, one so other Democrat running.
And that is?
Brent King.
And the primary is?
The primary is August 30th.
And this is a closed primary for Democrats only, correct?
That is correct. And Vern Buchanan has a primary, too. Only we haven't been able to find out who this is that's running against him. He is the most elusive individual I have ever found on the internet, or not found on the internet.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. Let me just, one of the other issues I just want to make sure that we get to is the banks, Glass-Steagall.
Glass-Steagall, excuse me,
the Dodd-Frank protection, et cetera. And one of the reasons I bring this up is the Bernie Sanders and the Hillary Clinton issues that Bernie Sanders brought up and how that affected Hillary Clinton. You've got a lot of knowledge here. What are your comments?
This is one of the issues on which I agreed with Bernie Sanders. We need to revive. Glass-Steagall was a law which separated investment banking from commercial banking. Right. There are basically two philosophies involved. One is inherently commercial banking, you get your mortgage, risk adverse. The other thrives on risk. And to allow them in the same institutions presents people with an unmanageable dilemma at almost every step. during Bill Clinton's administration, we got rid of Glass-Steagall. I think that that was a mistake. We do have Dodd-Frank. We do have the Volcker Rule. But they're not being implemented with any great enthusiasm. And we could be in for another bank collapse or economic collapse. So I favor bringing it back. A modernized version, because you have all new kinds right. of derivatives and all that. You would have to obviously modernize the legislation to meet new investment vehicles.
Still a supporter of Hillary?
Yes.
Still with her?
Who else can you support now? I am a 1,000% supporter of Hillary.
Even though you don't agree with her on every issue?
Of course not.
Okay.
Well, hey, I disagreed with her, had a big fight back in 2001 when she voted for the Iraq War. And that's still an area of great tension. I am much more a person who says the United States should not be involved in regime change all over the world. There are certain human rights issues on which we need to engage, but we have objectives of regime change that are unrealistic and counterproductive. So yes, of course I disagree with her on some serious issues, but she is the best qualified person that we've had run for president probably since George Washington.
All right, let's talk a little bit about energy. One of the issues, which is fracking, is a local issue here because there is fracking going on in Florida. We've had that on our show. That is on one of the issues that you talk about, the big issue. So tell us why, even though each state has its own regulations, and that is a state that would not be part of Congress to regulate what happens here in Florida. We talked about that in the show. So tell us Congress's role in fracking and Congress's role in alternative energy status that you see.
Well, fracking is an issue nationally as well because they use chemicals, inject them in the earth that are carcinogenic, that harm the drinking water, that harm people's health, and that's so wherever it takes place. And as such, it should be a national issue. Obviously, I oppose fracking in Florida, in case you didn't guess. Congress has a role, though, as alternative energy. I was very grateful for the League of Women Voters. We had solar panels on the roof for 20 years. Unfortunately, one day it was the old kind with the water, and it started raining in the bedroom. But that hasn't diminished my enthusiasm for solar panels, just temporarily while rain was falling. But in order to really have a sensible alternative energy policy nationally, Congress has to look at our infrastructure. We have to be able to get wind energy from the Midwest to Florida if we're going solar in Florida and we have a long hurricane season. And our infrastructure is aging. The transformers are aging. I was sorry to see when we were having stimulus in 2009, we didn't do more about energy grids. Also, obviously, bridges and some other infrastructure issues. But that's an area where however much we go alternative in Florida, we need backups and we need to provide for the future of much more reliance on renewable energy sources.
All right, let's switch gears and talk about some down-ticket races. Yes, you're running for Congress, but there's a lot of other things going on. There's up-ticket races. We got Trump, down-ticket races. What's going on?
There is a wonderful down-ticket on the Democratic side, and there are some good Republicans running, too. I see Ron Turner's our new supervisor of elections, and he's very experienced. But I can't be on WSLR without promoting Arlene Sweeting. Yeah. That's a terrific down-ticket race. She's running for Charter Review Board, and she is also one of the best qualified, most knowledgeable people we have in the area. We have a good state Senate race on both sides. We heard from Senate candidates at Tiger Bay yesterday. I was kind of disturbed at positions of Republicans on gun control, and we shouldn't have gun-free zones and things like that. But This is a unique election, too, because usually you talk about coattails. We have both presidential candidates are not very popular. In this election, there may just as well, as I was saying before, be an upticket effect. That's why I'm running on issues, because it's a really unique situation. I can't think of another election where the down ticket may have as much influence on the up ticket. Now, for example, we have a 20-something-year-old running for state senate. God bless him. I hope he will get out younger people. We have a professor running for the same seat. I hope he will bring out the college community. And simply bringing out the voters. They tend to come out for presidential elections, and too many people on both sides are holding their nose on this presidential election. So it's a major role that down-ticket candidates can play and voters in helping them. And that's true even in some races. Oh, people consider them non-viable. Viability in this cycle is a moving target and highly elusive, but whatever, by simply engaging voters, it's supposed to be a democracy. It's the voice of the voters that's supposed to count. So get out and vote.
All right, this is Jan Snyder. She's running for Congress, and we have just about a minute left, and I just want to give you this minute to talk to the people of District 16, and we're going to record this so you can post this if you're not getting it locally. What would you like to tell your district?
First of all, our IT person will kill me because I haven't mentioned the website yet, which is www.votejan.com. We need your help. We need volunteers. We need money and so forth. But I want to say, as you are racing down ticket, all candidates do. Find a candidate, support a candidate, get active, particularly in this election cycle. And while you're at it, please oppose Citizens United. That's something Congress can and has to do for the future of our country.
All right. Thank you very much, Jan Snyder, running for Congress. And that will bring us towards the end of our show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
All right, the news and views that you hear here are not of those of WSLR, its board members, its volunteers, just of the people that gave them. Take what you like and leave the rest. Stay tuned after this show. We have Complex Waveforms with Mark Zimpella. That's coming right up. And also tune in to Stratosphere Sarasota every other Wednesday from 9 to 9:30 with Nancy Norris and Andrea Gratis for science and social science perspective. Thanks for tuning into The Surreal News. You offer opinions, comments, and perspectives on the events of the week. Take what you like and leave the rest. We also had Glenn Gabellina with our local news, our catalyst. Thank you so much, Glenn.
Off to the music.
And of course, thanks, Francis, for coming by and co-hosting when Lou is out. Lou should be back next week.
They're all wonderful.
Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you for tuning in to your local community radio station, WSLR 96.5 LPFM, if you're in Sarasota, and WBPV 100.1, if you're in Bradenton, Florida. All right, so we have Complex Waveforms with Mark Zimpella. Great music. We have some Bill Frisell coming up right about now. Don't touch that dial.
Notes and forget my. Thank you.